It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Food Friday, we'll talk about a meal that's become more and more popular over the years, brunch. First, a lot of us are spending the holidays this year apart from our family members, especially older relatives who are at a higher risk for COVID-19. Whether those relatives are isolating at home or living in a care facility, being separated can be tough on everyone. Keeping in touch can be as simple as a phone call or a letter, and there are lots of ways to get creative and rethink the holidays to help our family feel connected and engaged, something our next guest knows a lot about. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How are you keeping in touch with your parents, grandparents, or other older family members this holiday season? If you are the older family member, if you've been apart from children or grandchildren this year, what's that been like? How have you tried to keep connections up? Are you rethinking holiday traditions in a creative way? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Ann Basting is a professor in the Department of English at UW-Milwaukee. She's founder and president of the nonprofit Time Slips Creative Storytelling. Her latest book is Creative Care, a revolutionary approach to dementia and elder care. Ann, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure to join you, Rob.
It's good to have you back with us. And now the pandemic's been going on for a while, and I know even early on, you were looking for creative ways to help people stay connected, drawing from your own work and your own research on these topics. What were some of the first things that you were doing to help families stay connected?
Well, I tell you, it's been a really hard, long road. In the beginning, I think there was this burst of creativity, and people were thinking about what can we do? What are the limitations we're facing? And then what are the avenues that we still have to reach each other? And those avenues in my own life, with I'm dealing with my own parents, are you know, everybody jumped on Zoom or FaceTime or regular good old landlines. The mail, I think, is particularly become crucial and an important part of people's lives. Lobby visits, which I think during lockdowns are even harder now. And then if you if you have access to the windows, people were also doing really inventive things just outside the window.
And now we've been at this for months. And I think the hope was we're going to do these creative things early on and then we'll be through the worst of it. But here we still are. And what do you say to people who, I'm sure people are still coming to you and asking for advice and recommendations. What do you say to people, especially as we head toward the holidays?
Well, the first thing I say is, you know what? Forgive yourself. This, we are all at the end of a very long road. It's great that we can see our way through to vaccines, but it's going to be a really hard couple of months. And an already stressful period of the holidays just got another layer of emotional strain. People are weary. People miss each other, even just our physical presence. And the isolation is causing a loss of resilience and even an uptick in memory issues because of that isolation. So I say at first, just relax and forgive yourself. Have a nap and a cry, you know, let it out. And then open yourself to play and imagination and generosity. Those three things can really reduce the stress of this moment and meaningfully connect you to each other. The challenge is to figure out how we turn hugs and presence, that the power of that unspeakable thing, into language that we can use to reach each other and send that message that we care and we're here and we're thinking of each other.
You've done a lot of work over the years making, helping people with relatives with dementia have really meaningful conversations when, you know, maybe those shared memories aren't there anymore. Are there lessons you can draw from that to make that phone call or Zoom call or letter more meaningful and engaging for everyone concerned?
You know, the last 6 months has just been this creative flourishing at Time Slips. We've had so many webinars and shared so many of our, we have over 900 certified facilitators across the world. And the joy has really been gathering from them all the ideas so I can share with you today some of those things that people have been doing. Gabri Krista is a friend of ours and a dancer, a professor at Barnard, and also the daughter of a woman with dementia who's living over in the Netherlands. And Gabri shared with us during one of our webinars this summer that every day she Zooms with her mother, and she really treats Zoom like a mini theater, a box, like a black box theater. And you can use it to enter and exit in funny ways. You can come close to the camera and bring your fingers up, close up or far away. Gabri was using puppets to kind of bring an object in and make it fly magically across the screen. She was doing things like setting up a ritual. Every day their conversations, she had a cup of coffee, and she would do something with the coffee mug as a conversation piece every single time. So setting up a ritual to your call and then being playful inside of it. Even if you have kids around the house, they can pop up from below the camera and the screen and be a surprise. There's all kinds of ways that you can play with Zoom as though it's your own little mini theater.
Talking to Ann Basting, professor at UW-Milwaukee, founder and president of Time Slips Creative Storytelling, talking about ways to connect with our older relatives and for older relatives to connect with the rest of their family in meaningful ways. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions and the things you've been doing to stay connected in your own family. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's bring on a caller now. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi. While my parents were alive, my dad, both of my parents had dementia. My dad wasn't all that much remembering for technology. My mom never was a fan of technology, so I would set up three-way calls with them, me, and my brother in Maine.
Yeah, and good conversations, Dennis? I think we lost Dennis there, go ahead. Were they good conversations, Dennis? Do you have fond memories of setting those up?
Yeah, because my mom really wanted to talk. My dad was just even less communicative as dementia set in, but my mom got quite a bit out of it.
Dennis, thanks so much for sharing that. And that's Dennis Scott lessons there even before the Zoom age. And it can be as simple as a phone call, maybe a multi-party phone call.
I tell you what, we did a project over the summer called Telestories, which is just going to that fantastic old technology of the telephone to invite. And we would start every call with what we call beautiful questions. And people can go to the Time Slip site to get a whole list of beautiful questions. Those are questions that don't orient people toward memory in case people are experiencing memory loss, but really toward imagination and wonder, and is a common point of departure just for discovery and imagination for both parties. It can really be a beautiful way to hold a conversation.
We're talking with Ann Basting, professor of English at UW-Milwaukee, author of the book Creative Care, A Revolutionary Approach to Dementia and Elder Care. We're looking at how to get creative with how we keep in touch with our family this holiday season, especially when seniors are involved, people at risk from COVID-19, how to deal with that isolation that can happen. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How are you dealing with these situations in your own family? Have you found ways that make people feel good, make people feel connected amongst you and your family members or other loved ones, friends as well? Call 800-642-1234. And how are you planning to deal with holidays? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll continue the conversation and maybe hear about some particular beautiful questions that can start these conversations. That's coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Ann Bastings, professor at UW-Milwaukee, founder of Time Slips Creative Storytelling, looking at how we can stay connected with older family members from a distance during the holidays. You can join in with your questions, your thoughts, your own solutions at 800-642-1234. And before we bring on another caller, you're talking about beautiful questions to help start conversations. Can you give us an example or two?
Sure. One of my favorites is what is a beautiful sound to you? And one of my favorite responses came, we collaborated with the John Michael Kohler Art Center, and they sent out one of those beautiful questions. And the answer they got was, your mother's voice from birth till the end of time. Just a really gorgeous response.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Franco is with us in Grand Marsh. Franco, hi.
Hi, Rob. Say, me and my dad love to play chess, and my dad lives in Milwaukee, and we play chess by mail. It's really neat. I have my chess board set up here in my living room, and he has his in his living room. And on a index card, you write down the move you want to make with your piece, and you send it in the mail, and he gets it, and he makes that move. And he mails me a move. I make that move. And right now, we're about halfway through the game. It's great. Great way to stay connected with your dad. Bye-bye.
Franco, thank you so much for sharing that. And Anne,
oh,
I know
that is
people.
Awesome.
Yeah. No, people could play online, and people do play online. I love the idea of playing by mail because, in addition, you know, it's got a slower pace and it gives you something to look forward to in the mailbox
day. It's no fooling. That is so powerful because, you know, it's almost like I describe it as leaving little breadcrumbs through the forest. It shows you the way over time. It helps set things into a long time frame, which is going to help us get through this winter. And I think sending a postcard that then opens up some little mystery of, is there going to be a pattern to the next one? You know, one of the ideas that we've had is to send a whole themes of postcards and invite the person to get some tape. And as the postcards come with messages on the back and beautiful pictures on the front, whatever kind of postcards or drawings even you want to make, the person can make a collage and put them up in order so that there's a sense of accumulation over time and meaningfulness over time.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Franco. We'll go to Michelle now in Ashland. Michelle, hi.
Hi. We do multi-generations, and we will pick the same food, such as pizza or ribs. We have the same meal together, and I ship the same dessert to everyone, so we have community that way. And we play games using clay, where we form things out of clay and show it up on the screen and discuss things like that.
And you have to guess what it is. Is that right, Michelle? The clay creation?
Yeah, everybody texts me a noun or a thing, and then we shuffle them, and yeah, everybody has to show their thing that somebody else told them to make.
I love it, Michelle. Thank you so much. And that's one solution, Anne, to, I think, Zoom fatigue or online meeting fatigue, making it something special, not just, you know, a work meeting with your family.
Exactly. And you know, you can also do themes or impersonations, or today we're going to do the rainbow, and each person gets a different color and they accumulate things of that color in their Zoom space. There's so many different ways to do it. And I just want to encourage people just to if you don't have Zoom, because, you know, we got to remember that not everyone has broadband, or even if people have a computer or an iPad and Wi-Fi, they might not have the ability to update their own software, right? Or it's just, you just never know where those bonds will get broken, and that the mail and the telephone can be just as powerful to do those things.
Thanks for that call. Lanny joins us now in Ashland. Lanny, hi.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Lanny?
Well, I just, first of all, I love your station. It's beautiful, beautiful,
thanks.
Beautiful. You know, you're very inquisitive, very good, very knowledgeable. But, you know, I'm 69 years old, and I like to write letters. I think it's a lost art. It's a forgotten thing, and people appreciate a good letter in the mail. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I don't have much to say, but I think, you know, the mail is a forgotten thing, and I think we should use it more often every day, you know?
Lanny, Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And Anne, I love what Lanny had to say, but he also hit my reservation about writing letters. I don't know what to say. How do we get a good prompt to write even just a short letter to people if we want to do this but have lost that lost art of letter writing?
You know, I am a champion for the post office. I have to tell you, I think I agree totally with Lanny that we don't value it enough. The power of the letter. Time Slips early on in the pandemic curated a list, and we still have it on our website. It's under the Get Involved post. You'll see it says the Postcard Challenge. And we have a list of over 140 care homes that have asked for mail, and a map of where letters people have signed up to send letters, so you can see which one might need a little more love and attention. And I must have personally sent over 250 postcards over the past couple of months. And all it takes is a little expression of I often say you have a friend in Wisconsin who cares and is hoping that things are okay for you. And then a response to whatever's on the front and a little inquiry to spark the person's imagination. And there's models on the Time Slips site for different ways to write a postcard like that. Hmm. And it's really, we've tracked now, I think, over 20,500 or something like that.
Wow.
Postcards that people have written over the last couple of months. So it's a beautiful way to do it. And, you know, that taps back into what I was saying about generosity. Generosity is proven when we turn outward and look to help another person, it releases our stress and improves our own well-being. So it's a win-win, both creativity, which reduces stress, puts you into a state of flow, and then also generosity. So worry about somebody and give a little care and expression of hope and joy to someone in your building. Leave a little anonymous poem or a drawing and tape it up onto the wall. Use the postal system if you can to send it to maybe to a care home and or to relatives just to let them know you're thinking about them.
Thanks for that call, Lanny. We're talking to Anne Basting from Time Slips Creative Storytelling, also a professor at UW-Milwaukee, talking about staying in touch with older relatives or staying in touch as older relatives. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
So my parents, they don't have dementia. They live in Milwaukee here as well. But early on in COVID, when everyone was social distancing and, you know, nobody knew exactly what to do or how to proceed, my dad and I started writing, I'd actually like to draw and paint. And so I'd draw rooms from different homes that we've lived in across the course of my life. But I wouldn't put color. It'd make it a little challenging. And so sometimes we get into debates about, was this piece of furniture here? Was this hat rack over there? And so it produced a kind of collective remembering, as well as then he'd write usually a letter response just about some stories about, oh, do you remember when this happened? And so it was just a fun way to just keep in contact. And then it was a little bit of a game as well, provided a nice release.
I love it, Marcus. And Anna, it's got to be a story after your own heart there, art to inspire
Boy.
This conversation.
I'll tell you, the creativity pouring out of people, that's it. When the barriers of COVID are set up, you know, we can't reach each other. The creative output that just flows right over those barriers is amazing. And I would say that is a fantastic idea for people who might not have memory issues. If you do think your loved one is experiencing memory issues, you can say things like, name a place that you've traveled, or let's imagine a place we'd like to travel. Yeah. What are the colors of that place? You don't have to tap into memory necessarily. You can invite imagination and share in that same sort of sensory connection that way.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Marcus. Vivian joins us now in Green Bay. Vivian, hello.
Hello, I'm enjoying your program very much today. But my niece and I play cribbage by phone.
Oh, that's great.
It's not a strong suit identity card game. And you might lose points if you can't take advantage of someone else's mistake when they don't count their own points. But that's a disadvantage that both players have, so it evens out again. And about the only time a suit matters is if someone has the jack, the nubs.
Right.
And that's what you would call. So you're not usually going to miss it. I thought at first we could do it without a notepad at all, but then I realized there were some things that we sort of had to keep track of on a notepad. But actually, we got better at it, and it is a way for cribbage lovers to continue to play.
I love it, Vivian. Very creative, figuring out games that you could translate, in this case, over the phone, Anne.
And I would also say that that's a perfect intergenerational project, because young kids don't know how to play cribbage or even what it is, right? So I actually asked my father to teach my sons to play through Zoom, and it was just great. It's a really lovely thing when you even asking a beautiful question, what are the games of childhood, and to have young kids talk about the games that they play and their older relatives to talk about either on the phone or on Zoom, to talk about the games that they played and then teach them to each other, which is really a fun thing to do as well.
Thanks for that call, Vivian. Just a half a minute or so left. Anne, can you leave us a little pep talk to tap into our creativity as we try to connect with each other over the holidays?
Well, it's uncanny timing, Rob, because Time Slips just launched all of these materials to help support family and friends, training that's free on the website. And on the 15th, we are having a family and friend gathering by Zoom. And you can call into it if you don't have Zoom. So on the timeslips.org website, look for that event and you can sign up for that. It's free and you'll learn all these creative engagement techniques. It's just perfect timing.
And that's timeslips.org. Anne, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's my great pleasure. You have amazingly creative guests, listeners.
We do. That's Anne Bastick, professor of English at UW-Milwaukee. She's founder and president of the nonprofit Time Slips Creative Storytelling. Her latest book is Creative Care, A Revolutionary Approach to Dementia and Elder Care. She talked with us about ways to get creative on how we keep in touch with older relatives during the holidays. Again, lots of advice at timeslips.org. Coming up, it's this week's edition of Food Friday, and we're keying in on brunch. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up Monday at 6 on The Morning Show, the Internet of Things has been a hot phrase lately. It aims to bring the benefits of internet connection to our appliances and more. But it's raising lots of security risks. Kate and her guests explore the newest technology. That's Monday morning at 6 here on the Ideas Network. Now it's Food Friday, and it's not breakfast, it's not lunch, it's brunch, and it's become a favorite part of the week for a lot of people. And with a lot of good reasons. It often includes sweet and or savory options, a little bit of decadence, some coffee or tea or something a little stronger, and it's a good meal for entertaining friends and loved ones when it's safe to do that again. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of brunch? What is your favorite dish? Are you on team sweet, team savory, or a little of both? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Belinda Smith-Sullivan is a chef, food writer, spice blends entrepreneur, and commercially rated pilot. She's the author of Just Peachy, and her most recent book is called Let's Brunch, 100 Recipes for the Best Meal of the Week. She lives in Trenton, South Carolina. Belinda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Best meal of the week. Make the case.
Well, I like brunch because I call it entertaining light. It's so different from when you are giving a Friday or a Saturday night dinner party. Everyone's stressful. They're tired. By the time Sunday brunch rolls around, everyone is relaxed. They're ready to just meet with friends or family and have a good time, and do so, in, as I said, in a very relaxed manner and atmosphere.
And it seems like you can make brunch as humble or as fancy as you want, or a combination of both. There's a lot of flexibility with brunch, right?
Absolutely. And the recipes in the book, I tell everyone you could use them or make them for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. I mean, breakfast for dinner has become a huge thing now. So brunch is anything you want it to be.
Now, when you do a brunch, do you have, you know, do you go for buffet style with lots of different options, or do you keep it a little simpler? Or I guess, does it depend on who the brunch is for?
It depends on how many people there are. If there might maybe six or less of us, I'll do a sit down kind of a thing. But if there are more than six, then I do a buffet.
Now, I will admit,
people are, they're free to move around and eat as much or as little as they like.
I will admit, we did for Thanksgiving, just our nuclear family here, we did Thanksgiving brunch. Nobody wanted turkey. The one ingredient everybody agreed on was bacon. So we got a great Wisconsin brand of bacon and built a brunch meal around that. Do you approach brunches that way, where you think, I know I want this one thing and I'll work out from there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to tell this tale on myself. People are always asking me, what's your favorite thing for brunch? I love the brunch burger.
Yum.
Brunch burgers are good. And you throw in an adult beverage with that? Oh, heaven.
We are talking about brunch on this week's edition of Food Friday. Belinda Smith-Sullivan is with us. Her newest book is Let's Brunch, 100 Recipes for the Best Meal of the Week. Well, Belinda, we've got a few recipes you shared with us at WPR.org/Food Friday. And you mentioned an adult beverage. Well, we've got one of those from you, a grapefruit, champagne, and vodka spritz. Tell us about that and why it's great as a brunch beverage.
Well, when you go out to brunch, and a lot of places will offer all you can drink champagne for the brunch, but that gets a little old, especially if you go to brunch every Sunday. By adding the Aperol and the grapefruit juice to it, just gives it a nice little kick, you know, and a little bit of sparkling water. And it's refreshing.
And what are some of your other favorite brunch time beverages, alcoholic or not?
Love Bloody Marys. I mean, it's the quintessential brunch drink.
And I think people could argue
all different things you can put in it. I mean, you know, you can, some people like to put pickled string beans in them. You can put okra. You can do something as simple as a celery stick, but there's just, oh, you can even put shrimp and a bacon strip in your Bloody Mary. I mean, there's just so much you can do to jazz it up.
Now, you mentioned okra, and I, you know, I'm from the Midwest. I couldn't have picked okra out of a lineup most of my life. I've fallen in love with it. I think of it as a Southern thing. Are there other Southern touches you like to bring to your brunch? Well, I know there are because I've looked at your cookbook. What are some of the Southern touches you like to bring to your brunch cooking?
Well, let me tell you, down here in the South, we eat a lot of shrimp and grits. There is a recipe in the book for, instead of using shrimp, it uses blackened catfish on herb grit with a pineapple relish.
That sounds fantastic. A blackened catfish. All right. Well, let's get into some more of the recipes you shared with us. Oh, and I should say, if anybody wants to join in with your brunch time favorites or just to profess your love for brunch in general, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You mentioned a brunch burger. Well, here's another dinner thing you've converted, a breakfast mac and cheese. What's that about?
I mean, what isn't made better with bacon in it? And that dish there is all you need. A nice helping of that mac and of the bacon mac and cheese. Oh.
And is that what else goes into your breakfast? Is it just as simple as you make your favorite mac and cheese recipe and work some bacon into it?
Yes. Now, because there's bacon in it, I did have to switch up the cheeses a little bit. I used a Gouda cheese that's a little bit stronger that can hold up to the flavor profile of the bacon. But other than that, yeah, use your regular mac and cheese recipe that you have. Again, choose a little bit stronger cheese with it and throw in your bacon and you're good to go.
That sounds and looks fantastic. I'm actually looking at the picture right now. It gives me an idea for dinner. Oh, no, I think we already have a dinner plan. And another one we've got there. Now, I don't make these often enough, frittatas. You know, I'll do quiche sometimes. I never think of a frittata, though it's easier than quiche even in some ways. You've got a spinach chorizo frittata that also sounds really good. First of all, give us the basics. The frittatas were new to me not that long ago. What is a frittata? Yeah.
A frittata is basically a giant omelet. As you said, it's easier than a quiche because you don't have to worry about the pie dough or the pie crust with it. And frittatas, I call them, it's when I make a frittata, it's clean out the refrigerator time because you can put anything in a frittata with the eggs. And you cook it mostly on top of the stove. You don't have to flip it like an omelet. You cook it mostly on top of the stove, and for the last 10 or 15 minutes, you stick it in the oven, and it's ready to go. It doesn't get easier than a frittata.
And quiche and frittata, I think of those as kind of the ultimate brunch food, like, you know, when we could entertain people if we had people over for a breakfast or brunch time kind of thing. That was an instant go-to, and it's an easy one to make the night before and then just heat up the next day.
Absolutely. You stick it in the microwave for a minute or so, and it's ready.
Fantastic.
Another one that's sort of in the same family is a strata. You make it, again, just like a frittata, except it has bread and potatoes in it. And that's another very, very filling, like that's all you would need is a nice slice of that.
You know, this year I've made a lot of bread pudding with just whatever leftover bread we've thrown into the freezer. Is strata just basically a savory bread pudding?
Sure. Absolutely.
That's a way to think about it. Okay. We're talking about brunch on this week's edition of Food Friday. Belinda Smith Sullivan is with us, chef, food writer, and author of a couple of books, Just Peachy. She joined us to talk about when that came out. Her new one is called Let's Brunch, 100 Recipes for the Best Meal of the Week. You can find the recipes if you're excited about them. There's some good ones at WPR.org/Food Friday. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of brunch? Why or why not? Is it something you like to make at home? Do you entertain with brunch? Do you like going out for brunch better than eating at home? And what food has to be there? It isn't brunch unless it has blank. Fill in the blank there. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. This is Wisconsin. What's in your favorite Bloody Mary? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our Food Friday conversation with Chef Belinda Smith Sullivan. She's sharing recipes and advice from her latest book. It's called Let's Brunch, 100 Recipes for the Best Meal of the Week. Still time for you to join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. Is brunch your favorite meal of the week? What goes into a good brunch? Do you have questions for our guest? Maybe some inspiration you need? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We were talking earlier, Belinda, about some Southern type advice. I think you mentioned grits then. I'm looking at the cookbook and the cheesy jalapeno grits. First of all, give us Midwesterners advice on how to make good grits.
Well, huh, that's interesting. On how to make good grits. It's just got to be just the easiest thing to do. You make it with water or milk or a combination, and you boil them, put a little butter in there, and, you know, after about 10 minutes, you've got grits. And then you could add as much as, you know, anything else that you like to it. But just plain grits are very, very easy to make.
Yeah, and then with this jalapeno and cheese thing, I mean, literally you make the grits and then you're throwing in the jalapenos and some cheese. You can get creative with whatever you want to put in, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Let's, we've got another recipe.
We like heat down here, so we put jalapenos or peppers and a lot of things.
Well, then after that heat, let's sweeten things up a little bit. Here's another recipe you shared with us, and we've got it up at WPR.org/FoodFriday, a lemon trifle. And again, and this is true with a lot of your recipes. This one sounded complicated to me. It looks like pretty easy to pull together. Talk about your lemon trifle.
It is very easy. Trifles are easy to make, and you can make them with any combination of cookie or pound cake that you like. But it's just it's an egg custard. And with this one, I made a lemon egg custard, and you make it with leftover pound cake. It could even be a little bit stale. It's okay because it's going to moisten up in this. And then with a simple syrup. And it's very, very easy to make. Again, doesn't require any cooking. It's just assembly.
I love it. Let's go to a caller now. Jeff is with us in Oshkosh. Jeff, hello.
How you doing?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about, Jeff?
We're going to talk about some Bloody Marys.
All right. What's got to go into your Bloody Marys, Jeff?
All right. First, I'm going to start out with an empty glass, and then I'm going to put some... One shot of vodka, another shot of vodka, and then four shakes of Worcestershire sauce, and then some hot sauce, some celery salt, tomato juice.
What time is brunch at your house on Sunday?
What's that?
I should say, what time's brunch, Jeff? But what vegetation ends up going on top of this?
Beef sticks, celery salt, olives, pickles, whatever you guys want.
You can make a meal out of it, Jeff. That sounds really good, Jeff. Thanks so much. Yeah, that's so. A lot of these things, Belinda, you start with the basic thing. Whether we're talking about Bloody Marys or grits or mac and cheese, you're starting off the basics. And then a lot of your recipes, you can just get creative from there with what you end up putting on top or mixing it in at the end.
Exactly. That's it in a nutshell. It's whatever your flavor preference or, you know, that you have or the flavor profile that you're looking for. I like the last guest. He said, I start out with one shot of vodka and then another shot of vodka. Person after my heart.
I was glad he stopped there, though. I didn't keep adding more and more shots. Thanks again for that call. John joins us next in Two Rivers. John, hi. Oop, are you there, John? Oh, John, sounds like his line is breaking up. He's a fan. He grew up the East Coast, moved to Wisconsin. Had some grits from Chicago over Thanksgiving weekend was the note our producer sent to me. Well, let's look at some more of the ideas in your cookbook, Belinda. What is your combination? I mentioned this at the beginning of savory parts of a brunch versus the sweet stuff.
I'm sorry, repeat that question.
Savory and sweet ingredients. How much do you balance those out in one brunch meal?
I usually have maybe two things that are sweet that you can either eat before, along with, or after the meal. So there's always some type of pastry that I will have. And then maybe a pie. And then everything else is mostly savory.
Now, I know last time we talked to you, we talked all about peaches with your mm-hmm. Cookbook about peaches, Just Peachy. Mm-hmm. Do peaches, especially in season in the South, find their way into your brunch pretty often?
Oh, absolutely. During the summer, it's a must. In fact, most of the time, they're the center piece on the table. Just a big, you know, bowl of peaches and let people grab them and cut them and eat them as they have their meal. We eat a lot of peaches here.
Now, you've got some entrees that I don't always think about as brunchy. But again, I guess there's no limits in oven roasted pulled pork. I mean, I'm happy with pulled pork pretty much any time of the day. Do you often put, you know, a dinner entree like this at the center of your brunches?
Sure. Again, here in the South, our Sunday meal that we call dinner is usually in the early afternoon. Mm. So what the most of the country knows as brunch is really our dinner time down here on a Sunday. So, yes, there'll always be some, say, you know, some things that are more geared towards dinner, because that's the last meal that we'll probably eat on Sunday.
That sounds really good. We kind of eat that way on Sundays too, actually, with that early dinner. So maybe I can lean toward kind of a brunch angle. Now, you've got a whole section on fish and other seafood. What are some of your favorites when it comes to the seafood category to include in your brunches?
I love the seafood and chicken paella. And you don't even have to add the chicken. You can make it all seafood paella.
All right. Now,
and then there's...
I was going to say, paella sounds difficult to me. How hard is it really to make a paella? That's something I've never made on my own. I've only ever had it in a restaurant.
It's not difficult, but depending on the number of different seafood ingredients you have, it's you're building. It's like a building block. So you're doing the rice first, and then you're adding layers of the seafood. You're putting it in the oven. You're taking it out. You're adding additional layers. So it's not difficult. It's just time consuming.
So maybe the first time somebody makes paella, they could keep it simpler, not have a bunch of different seafood ingredients, just one or two, and then work up from there as we master the basics?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, you've done brunch in home settings and restaurant settings. Can you talk a little bit about, putting on a good restaurant-style brunch? It's a big challenge, and sometimes it's hard to keep everything, out on that buffet fresh. What goes into a good restaurant-style brunch for you?
Oh, goodness. Lots. There will be a lot of different dishes. But not to get discouraged, because a lot of them can be made the day before or the day afterwards. I did my internship, or my externship rather, at in Charlotte at a Marriott, and I had the opportunity to work the omelet and waffle station. So there, and that's in addition to the 10-foot long buffet serving area that they have there. So just if you're going to do it restaurant style, just have a lot of different things there. I'd say maybe 4 or 5. Heavy entrees, and then a lot of hors d'oeuvres or finger type things that people can just pick up with their hands to eat. Offers maybe 3 or 4 different types of beverages, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic, because you'll have people there who do not partake in that type of libation. But yeah, just if you're thinking restaurant style, then as that saying goes, you want to go big or stay home.
Well, we will leave it there. Thank you, Belinda, so much for sharing this with us today.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me again.
That's Belinda Smith Sullivan, a chef, food writer, and spice blends entrepreneur. She's the author of the book Just Peachy. Her most recent book is called Let's Brunch, 100 Recipes for the Best Meal of the Week. You can find the recipes we talk about over at WPR.org/Food Friday. Those are chorizo frittata, a breakfast mac and cheese, a grapefruit champagne and vodka spritz, and this lemon trifle that looks really good too. Check them out. Maybe make them in your own brunch this weekend. Let us know how it turned out. And there's still time for you to share your brunch time favorites. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tell us what's got to be in your brunch assemblage. And you can tell us what has to be on your Bloody Mary if you drink Bloody Marys or make them. What kind of food ends up on top of that beverage? Again, Ideas Network Facebook page, and share your brunch favorites. Coming up Monday on Central Time, electors in Wisconsin and around the nation are scheduled to cast their ballots on Monday. It's usually a formality, but there's more drama during the ongoing effort to overturn election results. We'll look at the latest developments. That's a whole lot of compost. We'll take a tour of a mega composting project at UW Green Bay and find out how it's cutting waste and providing some healthy soil along the way. And if you're looking for a good read this winter, we'll continue our series of book recommendations with authors, this time with Wisconsin nonfiction writer BJ Hollers. That's all Monday on Central Time. A lot of Wisconsin is getting its first shovel-worthy snowfall of the season starting today and into the weekend. That means snowplows will be back in action. But when you see a snowplow on the road, are you on a first-name basis with it? In Wisconsin, probably not, but as some media outlets are reporting, things are different in Scotland. You can track snowplows in Scotland online. They're called gritters there, as they spread grit and salt, and each one has its own name. There's Sir Gritsalot, Sir Salter Scott, For Your Ice Only, and Han Snolo, Grittany Spears, and Gritalica, Melton John, the list goes on and on. The tradition goes back to 2016 when that live tracker went online and school kids were invited to help name the many trucks. In a quick internet search, I don't see anything like that here in Wisconsin, but maybe you have something at the local level. Do you know if the snowplows in your neighborhood are named? If you work for a local streets department, definitely want to hear from you. Let us know, do your vehicles have official names like this? Or have you been riding through the tundra on a plow with no name? Let us know. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or tweet us @CentralTimeWPR. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.